This is ESPN Crick Info.
Welcome to another edition of Talking T20, where we talk about all things T20. Largely, in this case, English T20, men's English T20. And joining me on a sofa in a greenish room in the bowels of Crick Info's offices in Hammersmith, which I have been forced to walk up the stairs to, three whole flights of stairs on one of the hottest days of the year, by a ludicrous fitness fanatic who joins me today. It's David Hopps. I look a year older than I did last week. You look as fresh as you always do.
I'm just relieved you've got your breath back.
Well, it's taken me the best part of 25 minutes. That's why the technical reasons that I've just had to text my wife for being home later tonight are, in fact, fear of imminent death.
That's good to know. Well, let's hope we get through this broadcast with you still alive and in one piece.
Well, we're with a chance. We're in with a chance. Right, we're looking at all things the Vitality T20 Blast related. We've had 14 matches this week. We may well think that there might have been more, or there could have been more, but 18 counties have produced 14 matches, 7 in the North Group, 7 in the South Group. There have been good weeks for Yorkshire, who've had 2 wins, for Surrey and Gloucestershire in the South Group, who've had 2 wins. Particularly bad weeks for Essex and Hampshire. Hampshire yet to get off the mark, still can't get a win. Also for Birmingham and Derbyshire, there are 2 sides who are still propping up the table in the North Group. Derbyshire and Northants, who have yet to register a win between them in their 8 games combined. And also Hampshire, Royal London One Day Cup champions. 3 losses out of 3. Hopsy, what is going on? What's going off out there, I should say, since I'm talking to a Yorkshireman?
Well, it's a very competitive group, isn't it, the South Group?
It's a very competitive group, always
and,
is.
Yeah, at the moment they're not nailing it. Liam Dawson, 75, not out the other night, came close to winning the game, didn't quite get them over the line. Needed 6, did he off the last ball? Ball by Mitch Claydon. And Claydon delivered the perfect yorker, and Kent had a victory. Now, that is exactly the opposite situation than what had happened a couple of days earlier, when Mitch Claydon was on strike. He needed a 6 to win against Gloucestershire, and he swung the bat with a mighty heave. The bat flew out of his hand, and he didn't get within a yard of the ball. So if you have Mitch Claydon involved in a game with 6 to win off the last ball, you want him bowling, not batting.
Well, I think that's fair. I mean, he is
a bowler.
Truth, a bowler, yeah. These little strange anomalies will crop up. We've had some other anomalies, really, which is that the South Group keeps providing us with exciting games, doesn't it? Gloucestershire beat Kent by 5 runs. They also squeaked home against Somerset by 4 wickets. Glamorgan beating Essex by 2 wickets. Kent beating Hampshire by 3 runs. But in the North Group, the margins of victory are a little bit wider. It seems to me that there's 4 or 5 teams bossing that group in the North. One team that isn't and is coming unstuck is your early season non-pick, who then turned out to be your pick, who is now, again, your non-pick. You are the most contrary of men, David Hopps.
Yes.
The Birmingham Bears.
Birmingham Bears. Look, all that matters on Birmingham Bears is you get their name right and you don't call them Warwickshire. I've no idea whether they're going to finish top 4. When I say they won't, they win. And when I say they will, they don't. I say Ed Pollock is the most exciting young batsman in the country. I point out the fact he's got the fastest strike rate in the history of T20, and he gets the first ball duck.
He did, yeah.
Although that didn't affect his strike rate very much, to be
no,
fair.
No, no.
At least it wasn't a 9 ball duck.
Yeah, that's very true, because we have seen we've seen the effects of slow batting, seen it mostly actually in international cricket, where that's been a fairly controversial topic, but we must stay away from that. One guy who shows to me the benefits of being an unsung hero with a high scoring rate, this wonderful sort of number 6 type bloke that comes in and makes the most of his 11 to 15 balls, none other than the great Kieran Nima-Barnett. Now, Kieran Nima-Barnett is a player that is universally derided for being a journeyman, wandering around the outfield like a slothful bear in search of honey, straight out of his hibernation period, discombobulated, scratching around, you know, terrible breath.
I don't think the name helps either, does it? I mean, at least with Pooh Bear, you could spell poo, couldn't you? Well, yeah. Most people could. But Kieran Naomi Barnett, I can neither say him nor spell him. Every time I write about him, I have to look up how to spell his name. So you immediately have a little bit of a negative against him. But he played well the other night, and, you know, he helped set up that victory at Bristol. Was that the one against Kent, I think?
Yeah, well, he's done it twice, actually. Yeah. And I say that, I mean, you were looking at the scorecard, it doesn't leap out at you, but he's got sort of 20 off 11, 30 off 15. Those kind of scores are really important ones, aren't they? In a side like Gloucestershire, because I'm trying to contrast Gloucestershire with the Birmingham Bears. Gloucestershire aside, with the exception of, you know, Michael Klinger, now Andrew Tye back in the side after the excursions out in Zimbabwe, a lot of Australians coming back in, more of which are none. But they're mostly a side of relatively anonymous players. So that's the point at which it really matters that the likes of, you know, Jack Taylor, who's playing there as a specialist batsman, really. He used to be a bowler with a questionable action. But people like he and Nima Barnett at 6 and 7, just around that 9th to 15th over area, are making big differences for them.
Well, Jack Taylor, of course, exemplifies Gloucestershire, that they wring every ounce of their ability out. Something perhaps to do with the coach, Liam Dawson. Jack Taylor, three times he was told his action was illegal. It would have broken many a professional, but he was tough enough to reinvent himself as a one-day batsman. And again, he doesn't strike you as a player of great talent. Like through that Gloucestershire side, as a journalist, they're quite hard to find a headline if it's not Michael Klinger, because essentially they don't hit you in the face, and they probably don't even hit their own fans in the face.
And you can't even spell half of their players'
and
names.
And you can't spell their names. But they keep winning cricket matches, and you have to respect that. They do have a good track record in limited over cricket. They turned Somerset in the West Country Derby, and you can't discount them.
That West Country Derby, by the way, the Will Brown, the chief executive at Gloucestershire, said that they got, I think, 8,000 to 9,000 people crammed into Bristol for that game. He also said that their gates have been going up and up and up, 20 to 25% improvements over the years. He's put that down to a very solid marketing campaign, adverts on buses, good social media campaign. They've never had bigger crowds. When I've been to games this season, albeit I live in London, so the Oval and Lords have often had quite a lot of people in them, but anecdotally as well, listening around the country, Durham have been getting more people than they normally do. Even Hampshire, we have a devil's own job getting people into that ground because it's stupidly situated and it's not easy to get to. Even they are having increased crowds. We've got to talk about it at some point, Opsy. I know you're a lugubrious Yorkshireman who doesn't like change, but on this occasion, I'm feeling very, very sympathetic towards you, because this blast, this season, and it must have something to do with the weather as well, but it seems to be generating a huge amount of interest, despite being put up against internationals, one-day internationals, women's internationals, the T20s that have been on. It's been strangely launched in the midst of a very exciting summer of cricketing interest and the World Cup. And yet it's going great guns, isn't it?
And the World Cup. And a lot of this is due to the counties themselves. Look, there is a latent interest in county cricket. There is a history. There is a tradition. The problem is that interest has been latent. Now, at the moment, the counties are doing so much good promotion of themselves. You can find clips of wickets. You can find in-house coverage of games, albeit quite limited with just a couple of cameras. But this gives county cricket a chance to get beyond the fact that much of the media ignores the game, and to go miss out the middleman, if you like, and go directly to the public and say, this is what we do. And I think they're getting the benefits of some of the great stuff they're doing in-house. And, crowds are growing at a very, very difficult time for the tournament, when essentially it's being talked down, it's being ignored, it's not being well marketed by the ECB, because the ECB are concentrating on their own eight-team competition, which is about to start in 2020. So the blast is constantly running uphill through treacle, and yet it's managing to achieve rising attendances.
Is that going to cause a problem? I mean, if at the end of this epic summer, this wonderful, boiling hot summer. Figures are crunched, and it turns out that they've had the best ever summer for the T20 Blast competition. Is this going to make for a rethink, or is that pie in the sky?
If it causes a problem, as far as I'm concerned, bring it on. Look, I don't think it will cause a rethink. I personally hope that the rethink in 2020 is that that competition becomes a T20 competition and another one, and not the 100. But there's too much TV money riding on the 8-team competition for that not to happen. That will go ahead, but I live in hope that the Blast will continue to go from strength to strength as a county competition.
Right, let's get back to the matches and the action that we've seen this week. Let's start in the South Group, because obviously I'm going to talk about Surrey. We've had a couple of words about Gloucestershire, who have won both of their games, beating Kent and Somerset. But Surrey started the competition with two losses. They were missing their overseas imports, no Finch, no Madison. They're missing some players out on England duty. They're not quite back to full strength. I saw Tom Curran today at the Oval. He was being put through his paces. He's going to be playing today, so he'll be back soon, which will be a big fillip for Surrey. But they won two games this week, and they won them really convincingly. One against Essex by 39 runs, one against Sussex by 52 runs. It's got their campaign right back on track, and there's one man in the middle of that who has surely been the catalyst of that. It's Aaron Finch, and Bruce Talbot talked to him earlier this week.
Well, my body feels like I need a bit of a break, to be honest.
The schedule you've had in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's probably been the last few years, to be honest. You make the most of some days off here and there, so it's just really, for me personally, it's come at a really good time. I think that we've got some really good momentum going into this break, so it would have been nice to maybe play one or two more games and keep that momentum going, but I mean, you take a break when you can in the hectic schedule of English county cricket these days.
And the more you play, I guess, and the more experience you have, you learn to adapt to the different, you know, the travelling and everything like that, a totally alien environment, maybe Zimbabwe last week here, the next week England.
Yeah, you do. Especially things like the IPL, they teach you a lot about mentally getting yourself up for a game after you... I mean, there's some times when you get home from a game at 1:30 in the morning and travelling at 8 a.m. the next day, and then you're playing the day after. So I think it's all about making sure that you're just as physically and mentally fresh as you can be going into each game. And for me, that when I've been playing a lot, it generally means not a huge amount of training, not a huge amount of hitting balls.
So you won't hear much for the next week or so before the next game, maybe one or two nets?
I'm actually going away for a couple of little days break with my wife.
All right. Somewhere nice?
Berlin, actually. Oh, so we...
Is that somewhere you've never been to before?
Never been there. I ducked off the day after we got married in April, so I think she deserves... She's been travelling around the world trying to follow some cricket around, so I think the least I can do is give her a couple of days in Berlin.
So there you have it. Aaron Finch, not a big fan of practice. He claims that games are coming thick and fast. He plays all around the world. He's just come back from a tri-series in Zimbabwe. Not for him, netting. He's got a point, has he? He's hit 60-odd and 130. So
I'm not sure he does. I think there are quite a few overseas players who come to the Blast and don't do much netting. Now, if you're meant to be a mentor of young English players, I'd like to see a few of those overseas players around the nets a little bit more than some of them are. I don't really care about their returns in games. And I do worry if the Blast are having to do these deals with players. Oh, come on, play for us, and you can nip off to Berlin or Paris or Scotland or wherever and just turn up largely on match day, just keep appearances up. I'm not sure how much that is happening, but it's certainly happening with a few players I've heard about. I'm not convinced that is healthy for the reputation of the Blast if those sort of deals have to be struck.
Talked about Finch there, but there's another Australian who's playing for Surrey, Madison. Slightly contrasting fortunes in those two games. He's not exactly hit the ground running. Do you know much about Nick Madison apart from his terrible, terrible moustache? It's not a good look.
I think he has a reputation he needs to rebuild, doesn't he? And whereas Finch is coming here, his reputation is implanted and he's started well. It's a bit more difficult for Nick Madison. He's probably come over here to help rebuild that reputation. You could imagine he's probably netting a little bit more than Finch is. And it's so far not so good. He's been one of the weaker players in that Surrey lineup. But Surrey will go from strength to strength, I think. Sam Curran has had a good season. He's helped hold them together while they've been weak. If you tell me Tom Curran is about to come back, then that's obviously good news for Surrey over the next few weeks.
Well, also, I mean, not just Finch for them. They've been quite pretty consistent with their batting, haven't they? Ben Foulkes has scored a lot of runs. Ricky Clark, a favourite of George De Bell, and the subject of Jared Kimber's article this week when he decided to pour over, well, last week it was, wasn't it? He decided to pour over Ricky Clark instead of Joe Denny. We discussed that then. Those three are batting really well for Surrey. And also Ollie Pope. He's doing something. That's sort of the opposite of Nima Barnett and Jack Taylor. He's sort of the glue. When the seventh over comes along and a couple of wickets have gone down just after the power play, he's kind of allowing the person at the other end to bat around them, which is another kind of role in T20. I don't know how smart stats would look at those innings. They might say, well, actually, he's batting below the strike rate he should be doing in those overs. But he's providing an important function, isn't he, for Surrey there?
Well, it just shows how Ollie Pope's career has developed so quickly, because when I first saw him in the Surrey side, this time last year? And he was the sort of player who interested you because he came in and he played innovative shots. But you would never have regarded him as the glue in an innings. So 12 months later, he seems to be fulfilling a different function. And his maturity has been quite striking this summer in all forms of the game.
He's a really astounding player, I think. I saw him in the North-South series, and just the way he played different types of innings, because he was a wicketkeeper in one game, he was an opener in another game, he was batting at six, then he was batting at one. In county championship cricket, he's very versatile. I have a horrible feeling that Surrey are not going to be holding on to him for an awful lot longer, especially now that that James Taylor has been appointed a national selector. I think he'll have his eye on a number of county players, and ones that he's been coaching, because of course he coached England under-19s. He knows a lot about the likes of Harry Brook, Ollie Pope. So I think we might see some intriguing selections on that front. And that's for another time.
I wondered what he'd make of Ben Rain.
Now, you're talking about the man who I was going to give the big build-up to Ben Rain, because it's performance of the week.
Well,
time.
If we
had a bell, shall we go for it?
We can still do the big build-up.
Because there are a number of contenders for performance of the week. Sam Billing's got another attractive 90-odd nod out this week. But there's one standout performance. It's a man who's close to your heart. 113 he got from 46 balls. Very much a bowling all-rounder, we thought, a couple of years ago. Don't know whether that's still the case. 8 fours, 10 sixes in that game against Birmingham Bears, whose bowling you wrote off air as being not up to it. Rubbish. You got a good opportunity as a Geoffrey Boycott fill-in for the first few matches, test matches of the season, if you like, as we wish Geoffrey well. But Ben Rain, 113 off 46. Where's this come from? He's what a player he is.
I like Ben Rain. I suppose you could call him a poor man's Ben Stokes in a way, and I don't think he should be insulted by that at this stage in his career. There's millions out there who'd quite like to be a poor man's Ben Stokes. Now, it was his first 100 for Leicestershire in any format, so we shouldn't get too carried away. But he was also the second fastest 100 by an Englishman in T20 ever. I'll tell you in a minute
ever.
Who the... tell you in a minute who the top one was. But I just like his combative approach to the game. Now counties are sniffing around quite a few Leicestershire players at the moment. I think Paul Nixon has come in as coach and done a very good job at Leicestershire. So people like Zach Chappell and Ben Rain are being looked at by other counties. Now, if I was in charge of a county, I'd be more interested in Rain than Chappell. Chappell can bowl a quick ball, and I can see why England are interested in Chappell, but he is a little bit delicate. Rain, I just regard as a player who can run through brick walls for you, very adaptable, full of stamina, competitive edge. I think Ben Rain's a super county pro, and it's good to see him.
He's going to get snapped up, do you think? You think he'll be taken off Leicester's hands? Because, you know, they're having a pretty good season, actually, given what people have thought about them and how they've performed, really, in the last 3 years. They've strung together county championship wins. They could have won two games that they lost very narrowly, should have won, you might argue. They could be second or even near the top of the county championship table. They've strung a couple of wins together here in the Vitality T20 Blast. They're surprising a lot of people, aren't they?
They are, but I just think from their point of view that compensation should be higher, or there should be some form of a transfer fee in the game. Otherwise, every time somebody like Nixon comes in and improves players and revives a county like Leicestershire, the following April he looks around and he's lost two or three players and he has to start all over again. And I just don't think that is a fair way to go.
Can I have a guess at the fastest underbound Englishman?
You certainly can.
Is that Adam Lyth?
It's not Adam Lyth.
Isn't it? Because no, he got 170 last year, didn't
very,
he?
Very occasionally, my knowledge on data does stretch beyond the broad acres. Not very often. Right. However, there is a bit of a link, I've got to admit, having said that. Because the answer is David Willey.
Oh, of
but
course.
Not when he was at Yorkshire.
When he was at Northants.
When he was at Northants and he played that game. He took Northants to the final in 2015. He took 20-odd off and over from Mike Yardie down at Hove.
I was there.
Sussex, won the game with four overs to spare and at Larrup to Mall basically over straight mid-wicket. And didn't he come very close to 36 off the over?
He did, yeah.
And the ball fell about a yard short.
That's right, yeah. That's right. I think it was Yardie's last game. In English cricket, it was
many of us would have retired, wouldn't we, after after an over like that?
I can't believe you. Were you a bowler?
Best not to talk about my bowling. I bowled non-turning left-arm Chinaman when we were in desperate trouble, and blocked the hell out of it as a stodgy, obdurate left-handed batsman. Shouted at people when I skippered, so we really don't want to go there.
Okay. That sounds fairly Yorkshire. So here's my performance of the week. I was going to give him a bit of a fanfare with a bell, but we don't have one. Ben Rain, outstanding. I've got to give some props, though, to a couple of other guys who've done pretty well this week. Tim Bresnan. Now, where does he keep on dredging up these performances from? You're a Yorkie. Is there really any truth in the rumour that he might be leaving Yorkshire at the end of the season? And if so, if you don't mind me saying so, how can Yorkshire afford to lose Tim Bresnan?
Well, there have been suggestions that Worcestershire, for one, have been talking to him, and I must admit, I don't know the extent of that. I've not been down at Yorkshire for a couple of weeks. Now, he'd be a sad loss because, again, he does epitomise an awful lot that's good about Yorkshire cricket. So, personally, I would think Yorkshire fans would be sorry to see him go. I'd certainly be sorry to see him go. But at the moment, this Yorkshire challenge in the Blast is being carried forward by players, again, with not too much star quality people. And that's a bit unfair to Bresnan. But people like the skipper, Steve Patterson, is taking wickets, took wickets against Worcestershire the other day. And batsmen, two young batsmen, Harry Brook and Johnny Tattersall, made runs in the last week. And again, they're not even being billed as exciting young T20 specialists, such as Ed Pollock is at Birmingham Bears. No one's saying that about Tattersall and Brook, and yet Yorkshire won two in a row. They're back in the mix in the top half again.
They do it in a kind of undemonstrative and boring way, don't they? They sort of win posting 161. That's the thing. They're not scraping home by three runs like Kent do after scoring 210. They're getting home by 12 runs after getting 160. It's not setting the tournament alight. Is that unfair on them?
No, it's very fair. I think if you were the club treasurer, you'd be thinking, do you think we can win in a bit more of an excited fashion? But if that was in Yorkshire, you'd probably not actually dare to say that, but you may well think it. In fact, even thinking it is probably an offence.
Here's something else that you're not going to want to think, and it will be an offence to you as a Yorkshireman. Lancashire's unlikely challenger. I say unlikely, that's not entirely fair. They've got a number of good T20 players, but I don't think they were really at the forefront of people's minds. Start of the season, we're thinking the likes of Notts. Worcestershire, genuinely, because of their good role, London form, and the players they've got, the bowling attack they've got, and the fact they bat so far down. And then in the South group, Sussex, Surrey, Kent. But Lancashire are really sneaking in there, aren't they?
Toby Lester, of course, who again is an unknown name, and he's taken wickets in Lancashire's last win. I looked him up actually because I'd barely heard of him, never seen him bowl, and he reminded me a little bit in some footage I found on YouTube of Alan Mullally, the old England left-arm paceman. He's already mid-20s. He's only played a handful of games, and I know his skipper Liam Livingston talks highly of him. It's probably a lot to do with Livingston Anderson that he's getting his chance. And, yeah, he's kicking things on west of the Pennines.
Right. It's time for the section of the programme where we look forward to what Jared Kimber's going to talk about this week, because Jared has a sort of, I'd say, a Nostradamus quality. Insofar as Nostradamus' claims have never been truly proven, I like to think that Jared Kimber is a latter-day Nostradamus. Well, so this week, which player has he trained his eye on after the unfortunate debacle of Ricky Clark?
Well, Nostradamus decided to do a piece on Benny Howell, who immediately pulled up with an injury, which has kept him out for 2 or 3 weeks. But I have seen this piece, and I would say watch out for this, because there is a great story to tell about Benny Howell, and Jared Kimber tells it. Should be on Crick Info in the next couple of days, and I'd highly recommend you take a look at it.
Well, I look forward to that. I like Benny Howell. He's a kind of cricketer that epitomises Gloucestershire. He's a bit like a supercharged Kieran Nima Barnett, in actual fact. He's got a better both disciplines, isn't he? But and also a guy who's been prepared to play without being paid at various places at various different times. He's an extraordinary character. Now then, where are we going to go next? Let's take a look at Essex. I like taking a look at Essex, because Essex are a team that confound me. I kind of think of them as being real potential T20 powerhouse team. Ravi Bapara, Tendulkar, bits and pieces players who are excellent with both bat and ball. You know, excellent bits and pieces players. Ravi Bapara, you know, is the seventh most prolific run getter in all forms of cricket in the last 10 years. In the world. Not just England, in the world. Kumar Sangakkara tops that list. I think he's got more even than Kane Williamson.
So if you have this wonderfully balanced side full of bits and pieces players, then why is Simon Harmer coming in at seven ahead of four players who can barely bat?
Well, indeed.
So I think they do have problems. I certainly think they're confounding Adam Zampa, who sounded a bit frustrated after the match the other night when they lost at Chelmsford. And he's put it down to mental strength rather than technical ability. I also put it down to the signing of Matt Coles has not gone as well as they must have hoped.
I don't think they're using him right.
Well, how would you use him?
Well, I think actually it's his batting that's going to be more helpful to them. They constantly, the game they played against Surrey, they needed to go 12, 13 and over. And they brought Harmer in instead of Coles. Now, I've seen Coles nearly win a game at Surrey in extraordinary fashion. He got a 90 off 40-odd balls. He hits the ball miles. I know he's thought of as a bowler who bats, but in T20, he could do a proper job. He could do a Nima Barnett role. This is the podcast of Nima Barnett. I don't think he's ever been mentioned in a podcast so much in his entire life. But do you know what I mean? I mean, I especially when you're short of really powerful big hitters, I'd be putting him in at six or five.
I do agree up to a point. I wouldn't say six or five, but certainly I think there's a strong argument for Coles at seven and Harmer at eight. I do wonder if Harmer is at seven to justify his place in the side, because he's not always completing his overs, and therefore you've got to regard him as a genuine all-rounder to get him in the side. But I'd be batting Harmer at eight, and I'd be saying to Matt Coles, look, if he went for, what, 3 overs for 40 against Surrey the other night, he's not pulling up trees with the ball. If he's going to be worth his place in the T20 side, and they need him to be because he balances up that team, then he has to get runs at seven, and he needs to awaken to that responsibility.
They are in a bit of a pickle, Essex. We're going to look at the tables and look forward to games shortly. But before we do, I just want to finish off on a couple more, I suppose, informal awards that I want to hand out. Catastrophic bowling analysis of the week. For me, it's got to be Gareth Bergh. None for 60 off 4 against Kent. If you translate that into full 10-over spell, that's none for 150 pro rata. None for 60. It's not the worst ever. It's not up into the 70s and the early 80s, which has been done. Chris Rushworth went for 29 in an over. That's another one I want to just highlight, I think. Is that the most expensive over of the week?
It could well be. Like the the one that I enjoy the most, the catastrophic over of the week, is Colin de Grandhomme against Durham, because it gives me an excuse to mention that Paul Collingwood took 27 off and over.
Oh.
And I just think anybody post 40 is still in there. Paul Collingwood, who was regarded for 9/10 of his career as a bit of a scuffler, even when he was winning test matches for England, he's now stood there, topside of 40, smiting 27 off and over. I think that's a good feeling sort of stat.
It is. And, you know, and also the fight back came against the leggy when Imran Tahir was walloped for four successive sixes in and over this week, which I think shows that, you know, we're not just going to roll over and die as these unorthodox leggies come in and try and prove Jared Kimber's points.
As the world's leggies come into the blast and prove that we're stuck in the 19th century, they really do have to disappear once or twice, don't they?
You've also got Greek tragedian of the week. So up 1 minute and down the next. For me, is Jofra Archer. 3 for 26 one day. Then the next day, he drops a really easy caught and bowled off Aaron Finch. He goes none for 39 in his four overs as Surrey set an imposing 192 against Sussex.
It would be unfair to mention he dropped him on one and he went on to add another 130 to that total.
If we're going to hand out this award each week, presuming somebody does have a rise and fall of such magnitude, I think we're going to have to call it the Oedipus Award. The Oedipus Support Award of the Week. So that's going to Jofra Archer. Anyway, we're going to look forward, shortly, to what's happening next week. And we must also remember that it's not just men who are playing T20 in this country, not in the least. The much-vaunted KSL is getting a bit of a revamp this year, the women's version of the tournament. There are six teams playing in it, and where previously they'd only played one game against each other each, so a league season that lasted no time at all. You played five games straight to finals day. They've got a bit more confidence in their product this year. They're playing 10 games. They're playing home and away. And looking forward to that, which starts this Sunday, so just before we're back next week, I caught up with Charlotte Edwards at Leicester. So I'm joined by Charlotte Edwards, whose team, the Southern Vipers, are the strongest outfit in the KSL. They have been for the first 2 years. Are they going to be the strongest outfit again in this new version of the tournament where you play home and away? 10 matches. It's a nice long tournament. Will you be able to last the distance, Charlotte?
Yeah, it's going to be slightly different this year, obviously, with the 10 games, because, you know, the previous seasons, it's been very much you've got to start well with the five games, but with 10 games, and, you know, we've arguably got our best squad we've picked in the 3 years that it's been going. So I'm really pleased with the squad we've picked, and really looking forward to it, getting it all underway on Monday.
So who have you got? Tell us some about your signings, your Vipers signings.
Yeah, so our overseas signings, we've got Susie Bates, who's going to come in as captain, Amelia Kerr, the young leg spinner, and and Mignon Dupria from South Africa. And then our England players are Tash Farron, Danny Wyatt and Tammy Beaumont, who's in really good touch at the moment.
Whom you've stolen from the Surrey
Stars. We haven't stolen anyone, Dan. We have literally
reallocated.
She's been reallocated by the ECBs because they lost me as the England player. So I think we've actually done quite well. Got rid of me and got Tammy Beaumont. Really good. And some young players. We've got a girl called Maya Boucher from Middlesex. And I'm really happy with, like I say, the side we put together.
Do you think that the KSL still has, can be a sort of springboard for somebody to arrive out of nowhere? Now, there's a women's T20 taking place in the West Indies. There are 10 of these matches. They're going to get good coverage on Sky TV. The BBC are going to cover some as well. There's a real opportunity for a bolt, if you like, a bolter. And if so, where might you see a bolter coming from?
Well, I think we've seen a couple over the last couple of years. Bryony Smith, Surrey Stars, I think she had a good year one and really put herself in the shop window. Sophia Dunkley from the Surrey Stars. I hate keep mentioning the Surrey Stars.
You mentioned them a lot. I'm very pleased, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they're a couple of players, but I absolutely agree. Emma Lamb from Lancashire, I think she's a young player who's shown some real promise. But, you know, I think it's even important for girls like Katie George, who's just got the opportunity here to cement her place within the England team. So, you know, I think it's a great shot window for these young girls, and they should see it as a massive opportunity, like you say, to maybe sneak a little trip to the West Indies in November.
Now, in terms of other foreign stars that have come into play, overseas stars, we should say, Is it as big as the Big Bash, do you think? Do people around the rest of the world look at the KSL and think, I want to be involved in that in the same way as they do with the Big Bash, or has it still got maybe a little bit of a way to go?
I think it's got a fair way to go. I think, you know, without a doubt, the WBBL has set the benchmark for domestic competitions around the world. But for overseas players, it's a really good way to get that really top level of cricket. You know, we've got attracted quite a few new players to the league, Harmanpreet Kaur and Spriti Mandana. So,
well, that's a big thing, isn't it? I mean, getting Indians over,
because
you don't see many Indians playing in the Vitality T20 Blast. If you hear bangs in the background, by the way, it's because we are at Derby, at Leicester, I should say, and the Sky Crews are de-rigging. But
we're okay.
But we're fine. We're safe. But, I mean, that is a big coup, isn't it, to get Indian players coming over?
Yeah, it's massive for the tournament this year. And two real world-class players. I mean, Harmanpreet Kaur, who hit that sensational 170 against Australia last year. And I think Mandana, one of the brightest talents on the circuit right now. So I think that's going to bring an extra dimension to the tournament this year. So, and with the 10 games as well, and you know, lots of new English talent coming through, I think it's incredibly exciting.
Okay, lastly, I know you're going to tip the Vipers. But I want you to just give me a couple of other sides to look out for. Sides like Lancashire, for example, have struggled in the competition, as did Yorkshire last year. Loughborough have been a bit in and out. So far, it's been Surrey, Western Storm, really, and the Vipers who have been the strongest. Do you see it staying pretty much like that, or do you see changes this year?
I see Loughborough Lightning. I see Loughborough Lightning as a real challenger. To see some of the talent on show with Amy Jones coming into form, Georgia Elwis has done well. I think they've actually got a really good squad they've put together, and I think you know, they're my tip if the Vipers weren't to win to win the KSL.
Well, there you go, you heard it here first. Charlotte Edwards is tipping the Loughborough Lightning if it's not the Vipers. Charlotte, thanks ever so much for joining us on Cricket Info. So there you have it, hot off the press. The Vipers coach Charlotte Edwards, former captain of England, is tipping Loughborough Lightning as the team to watch for this year. I'm obviously hoping that Ebony Rainford Brent, my colleague at BBC TMS, will lead the Surrey Stars in what could be, who knows, a double for Surrey in the Vitality T20 Blast. And the KSL chances of that, I dare say, are small. But let's take a look at the tables, because they make interesting reading after last week. Things have changed ever so slightly. We'll start in the North Group, where Worcestershire have finally come unstuck. They had to lose their unbeaten record eventually, but with Worcestershire and Sussex both losing this week, no more unbeaten teams out there. Who were they beaten by in the end? It was Yorkshire yesterday. And Yorkshire, with their victory, they tucked in right behind. So Worcestershire have played 5 matches, have 8 points, and then you have a slew of teams. Lancashire, Nottinghamshire and Yorkshire have played 4, have 6 points. Leicestershire and Durham have played 4, have 4 points. The Birmingham Bears are now down to 7th, having played 5 matches and have 4 points. And as we mentioned earlier, two sides who have yet to register a point, Derbyshire and Northants, how they must be waiting for the rain to come to guarantee them at least an abandonment. Those two teams are going to have to play each other at some point. So there's hope. There's hope there for one or the other. And into the South Group, Sussex have been knocked off their perch despite that magnificent bowling lineup. It was Surrey that went to Hove and knocked them off the top, not by going ahead of them. Kent have moved ahead. They're on top with played 4, 6 points. Sussex played 4, 6 points. Gloucestershire played 4, 6 points. All tightly separated by net run rate alone. Then Surrey, who were bottom of the table, have zoomed up in a week with those two convincing victories thanks to their net run rate up to 4th. They've played 4 and have 4 points and a massive net run rate. The best net run rate actually in the division as a result of those two thumping wins. Glamorgan, a tidy side that we seldom talk about. We may find more time to talk about them next week. Played 3, 4 points. Then Middlesex, who have not played a game this week. They won't have played a game for the best part of 2 weeks. Their next game is on Thursday, more of which in a moment. Shocking fixture scheduling. Somerset played 3, 2 points. Essex played 4, 2 points. And at the very bottom, Hampshire, as we said earlier, yet to register a win. Just quickly on that Middlesex issue, there are a lot of gripes that a lot of county fans have. We're brilliant at griping, but from a Middlesex point of view, how frustrating is this? There's a heat wave going on. They have a ground in London which can accommodate 28,000 people who would be flocking to those games right now. They're not going to play a game for the best part of 2 weeks. I saw John Simpson the other day. their keeper, at an event in Hyde Park, kicking his heels. I mean, obviously he's done a bit of training and what have you, but it's infuriating, isn't it?
I think the fixture list is a mess. You have other counties who are playing three times in 5 days. You have home matches crammed together, three in a week, so people don't go to all three because they can't afford the outlay, or they just don't want to do as many as three matches in a week. Then you have sides like Middlesex that go 11 days without a fixture. I fully accept the problems of the English fixture list. I accept the fact that people also want championship cricket in the middle of the blast, and therefore that adds complexities. But I do not believe that mathematically this is the best planned fixture list you can get. There have to be better ways to do it. And if the ECB can't do it under their present systems, then get some better systems in and let's do something better.
One day they're playing six games or five games in a day. Other days they're barely playing a single game. And this is a competition, let's not forget, which we both love dearly, but in which sides play 14 games in a nine-team group. So they're not even playing everybody home and away. And Middlesex are sat there kicking their heels for 10 days thinking, well, why couldn't we have played the other two games? You know, why can't we find a way of playing 16 games? If sides can genuinely end up not having any games for the best part of a fortnight, then surely we can find a way of making this a proper group structure. You know, any league that doesn't play home and away strikes me as being compromised. And it seems even more silly when there are times when teams aren't playing.
You can understand the problems in the Championship where matches were cut by a couple because that was 8 days of cricket. You can understand the difficulties of getting 8 days in. The way the blast is scheduled, I do think there is room for an extra 2 days, and I don't think there's any excuse at all for cutting from 16 to 14.
IPL lasts best part of 2 months, and the side never goes more than 5 or 6 days without a game. It's absolutely ridiculous. They're normally playing every 3 or 4 days. Anyway, that's that gripe done with. Let's take a look ahead at the games that are taking place next week. There's some humdingers out there.
Yeah, well, Hampshire Middlesex, you can tell me a little bit about that.
Well, they'll be ring rusty, won't they?
That's quite a sad one, isn't it? Quite a sad one at the bottom of South Group.
Well, you say it's sad. It could be an absolute humdinger because, of course, if Hampshire were to lose that and go, having lost their first four games, they'll feel terribly detached. And they're a side that regularly get to finals day. For Middlesex, big test, isn't it, of their specialist T20 coach Dan Vettori. If he's not going to turn it around this year, then people are going to start wondering. Questions will be asked, let's put it that way.
And I must admit, I do fancy Hampshire in that one. I think they're too good to continually lose. They do have a good T20 11, and I'd make them quite strong favourites to win that one.
What have we got in the North Group that grabs your eye?
Carlot further than the Roses match, I'm afraid.
I didn't think you could.
No. First Roses match at Old Trafford, Lancashire, Yorkshire on Friday night. Bound to be a capacity crowd. Fortunately, it's coming along before the weather breaks. We're waiting for the weather to break, aren't we? And
it's supposed to break on Friday in London.
Well, not that far north as far as I know. So that should be a wonderful occasion. The Roses match for me is a highlight of the T20 summer, and as far as I'm concerned, it's brought Roses cricket alive again. I mean, when I first started covering this game professionally, which is going a long way back now, 30 years, I sat through some dire Roses contest. 12 successive draws, negative cricket between actually quite poor sides at the time. People afraid to try to win matches, terrible declarations, defensive fields. Also rained a hell of a lot in Roses matches through the mid-80s. Kick on 30 years, it's the T20 that is bringing Roses cricket alive again. That's saying there have to be winners, there have to be losers. So in Roses match now, people again are getting used to the fact that you do win Roses matches and you do lose Roses matches. I think the T20 Roses match has done a great service to the traditions and the legend of Roses cricket.
And actually, it's an important game in the context of that group, with both sides resurgent, riding high, all of them still just trying to cling on to Worcestershire's coattails, made a little bit easier by their loss, of course. We're going to chew the cud on that game and many others. We're going to see if Surrey can continue their revival, if Hampshire can get off the mark, if poor old Derbyshire and Northants can pick up a point finally. But that's for next Monday. Until then, from me, Daniel Norcross, and from you, David Hopps,
goodbye.
Goodbye.
This is ESPN Crick Info.